Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. It's September 14th, 2020, live, to be rebroadcast September 16th, 2020, on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host Ron Meniza.
Hey.
During the pandemic, we are not broadcasting in the Yukon Student Union. Instead, we are broadcasting live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut, on Mondays at 10 o'clock a.m. on Facebook Live. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also check out my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at FranStorchND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. All right. So here's some interesting statistics. The CDC came out with some statistics stating that all of the COVID-19 deaths in the United States, only 6% of them were from COVID-19 alone. This caused a stir in the media, and there was a right-wing conspiracy theory that extrapolated this to mean that really only 9,000 people had died from the coronavirus. President Trump retweeted this conspiracy theory, and it was subsequently taken down. It was posted by someone named Mel Q, who was likely connected to the QAnon group. This is not what the CDC meant. This meant that in 6% of COVID-19 deaths in the United States, coronavirus was the only cause of death listed. In the other 94%, each person had at least two other conditions listed as causes of death. This does not mean that your chances of dying of the coronavirus are only 6%. It does mean that if you have pre-existing conditions such as diabetes, high blood pressure, asthma, cardiovascular disease, obesity, and other chronic conditions, it's a really good idea to get them under control. COVID-19 likes weak spots. It likes weak immune systems and places where normal tissue is breached. So if you have high blood pressure, you're likely to have somewhat leaky blood vessels, allowing the virus to enter through the endothelium, stick to pericytes, and cause clotting. If you have asthma, you have chronic lung inflammation that will allow the virus to more easily enter lung cells. If you have diabetes, your cardiovascular and renal, that's your kidney systems, may be compromised, allowing the virus to enter tissue through those breached cells. And if you have chronic digestive issues, such as GERD, gastroesophageal reflux disorder, chronic heartburn, irritable or inflammatory bowel disease, the virus is more likely to enter through that route. This is not to allay your concerns and say the risk of dying is much lower than we thought. It's a call to really look at your current state of health and take charge of it. So talk with your friendly local naturopath or with any doctor who's tending to any condition you have and work on optimizing your health. Eat as healthfully as you can, lots of healthy protein and produce, avoid processed foods, sugar, too much alcohol, and many foods that you know make you sick, and any foods that make you make you sick. Get regular exercise and sleep, work on stress reduction. All of these calls to improve health are difficult because the nature of the pandemic makes it difficult to follow these issues, but anything that you can do to help, anything that you can do can be helpful, even if it's just checking in with your doctor to find out how you can improve your health. Anything you do to improve your health will make you less likely to get severe coronavirus illness. Notice that I said less likely. The CDC said that 6% of cases had no known other cause of death. We don't know if that means the folks had no other comorbidities or if they simply weren't listed. So I believe that there's a chance that a perfectly healthy person could suffer serious COVID-19 disease. Anything that you can do to protect your health will help. So you shouldn't misconstrue this idea that only when they listed out all the people who died from COVID-19, that those 6%, that really everyone else died of some, that's what they're saying, that 94% of the people listed as dying from COVID-19 really didn't die of COVID-19. They died of some other condition, one of their comorbidities, and only 6% actually died of COVID-19. That's not how to interpret that. What that means is the people had other comorbidities. They also happened to have COVID-19, and it's quite likely that their comorbidities made them more likely to die of COVID-19. So it means take care of your other conditions. If you're not in good health right now, it's a good idea to take care of those conditions. It also means that, so that means take care of your likelihood to get really sick from COVID-19. So if chronic inflammation, for any reason, then you need to attend to that, because if the virus gets deep into your body, then you're going to be less likely to be able to fight it off. The other side of that is just to continue doing hygiene. Hygiene is something that you can do if you're, no matter how sick you are, no matter how well you are. If you do the hygiene recommendations, the virus is going to be less likely to take hold. So if you clean your nose, if you gargle, if you wash your hands a lot, if you wear a mask, you're less likely to get as sick, even if you do get sick. The virus, it appears that how sick people get also depends on their viral load. So if they're exposed to a large viral load, they're more likely to get sicker. So if you go places where there are a lot of people and a lot of people talking, laughing, singing, and you're not protected, you're going to be more likely to get more serious disease. Whereas if you stay away from such situations and every time you go out, you wear a mask, you wash your hands frequently, definitely when coming in and out of a store or anywhere there where you're indoors, where there are a lot of people, or anytime you touch something that's not yours, you wash your hands, you're going to be less likely to carry virus on your person. And if you're wearing a mask, even if somebody has virus near you, less virus is going to get to you. Also, if you have virus, you're less likely to infect someone else. And if you have a lower quantity of virus, it's more likely that you're going to be able to develop immune proteins quickly, and you'll overcome the virus before it really takes hold. So all those hygiene things are important. Right now is just not a great time to go and be in a large church or synagogue or place of worship with a lot of people talking and singing. It's not a great time to be in a party with a lot of people. It's not a good time to go to a bar. It's a time to really practice physical distancing and not be around a lot of people. And what's really unfortunate and really kind of sad is that right now you can spend time outdoors with your friends as long as you're distance, and if you're too close, you wear masks. But you can be outside. Soon the weather's going to turn and it's going to be harder to just sit outside with your friends. Now, I recommend that you find ways to do that, to build fires and sit around a campfire and share a hot beverage and still hang out with your friends. And this would be a good year to really see if you can brave the elements, that if you want to hang out with your friends, this is a good time to figure out, can you do some cold weather hiking? If there is snow, can you go out and be in the snow? And see if you can brave the elements, because if you're able to do that, you're going to be able to spend more time with other people. I'm in a situation where I'm probably not going to see my family anytime soon, my sister's comfort level is such that, she's not really seeing anybody near her house. And my mother says, don't travel. She doesn't want me traveling from here to Florida and potentially picking up the virus. And she's in Florida, and Florida is a high risk situation. The other thing that we found out is if you look at the Vermont, the map from Vermont, the Vermont Public Health map, so Vermont has a really intense way of determining who should quarantine when they come to Vermont or before they come to Vermont. And if there are over 400 active cases in the county, not in the state, but in the county where you live, you have to quarantine for 2 weeks before you come to Vermont, or you can get a test within 7 days of the most recent, after quarantining for 7 days, you can get a test and then you can come to Vermont if you're negative. So we found out that Tallinn County has over 1,000 active cases according to that map. So in terms of total cases and total rolling case levels, we are still in a low case level part of the country. But right now, Tallinn County had a spike in cases, and I'm assuming that part of it had to do with the universities and, people going, it probably has to do with universities and people going back to school. So we have the University of Connecticut, which is a large university, and we have people associated with it. We also have Eastern Connecticut State University, although Windham County, where Eastern is, didn't have such a spike in cases. but we've definitely had a spike in cases here in Tolland County. We're sitting in Mansfield Hollow here, and we have a spike in cases. So really important to follow the recommendations and, limit who you spend time with, limit the amount of people you're around, spend time outdoors. It's still beautiful. September is a gorgeous month. It's really a great time to be outside. It's a great time to just sit outside. Sitting outside is good for you. You get negative ions, you get stress reduction, you get a sense of peace. And then, of course, if you're going to do exercise, see if you can exercise outside. That's a good thing to do. If you want to brave your gym, as long as the gym has good practices in terms of cleaning, you can do that. So, and I'm thinking for myself that I may go back to the pool, because I feel like the pool is a pretty, that you're not going to catch COVID from swimming in a pool that's full of chlorine, even if there are other people in it who are breathing. You're more likely to catch COVID in a pool if you stand and talk to somebody and you breathe the air with them. But if I go into the pool and I do my workout and I get out, I'm unlikely to get sick. So I may go back to swimming when the weather turns, because I'm enjoying just exercising at the house. It works for me. So anyway, it's really important to practice hygiene. If you have an inflammatory condition, if you have a chronic conditions are hard to deal with, and you have to go to your doctor, you have to work out a good plan, something that works for you. And it takes time and effort and intention to work on something like that. Whereas hygiene, anyone can do. And the hygiene is a big deal. You can kill coronaviruses with things like salt and essential oils and iodine. So if you have a nasal spray that you put a little bit of iodine, like a drop of iodine into, that can help kill the coronavirus. If you gargle with anything with essential oils in it, plus a little bit of iodine, that can help kill the coronavirus. And anyone can do that. And you're going to be less likely to get sick. So I'm trying to make sure that I gargle and spray my nose at least once a day, if not more. I mean, twice a day is better because things can set up overnight. So when you get up in the morning, it's a good idea to gargle and use a nasal spray as part of your morning hygiene. And then do it at the end of the day so that you're getting rid of whatever you collected during the day. All right. So more stuff. Yeah, this is going to be one of those days where we talk a little bit more about COVID-19, unfortunately. In early August of this year, the CDC dropped its recommendation to test anyone who has been known to come into contact with a COVID-19 positive person, even if they are asymptomatic. This received a lot of backlash, that it might be politically motivated, that asymptomatic people can become symptomatic, that it's necessary to isolate the asymptomatic because they can spread the virus. Many states were requiring people to be tested before they could return to work, and the CDC was saying that isn't necessary. But Scott Gottlieb, who's the former head of the FDA under Trump, said that by not testing exposed people, infected people would not be as readily found and isolated, causing more spread. The CDC was ultimately pressured by medical groups to change this guidance. So one of the things that happened was Ron and I made a decision that we wanted to get ourselves tested. We are asymptomatic. So we went to a walk-in clinic that was doing COVID testing. We were asked a lot of questions. And when the woman determined, the nurse who was going to take care of us, said, "I'm happy to give you a COVID test." But she asked us a lot of questions. And when she determined that we were asymptomatic, she said, "I'm happy to give you this test, but just so you know, your insurance might not cover it." I said, "Really?" Because they had just come out with that recommendation, and I thought it was just a recommendation, and still you could, because of Katie Porter talking to the head of the CDC, saying, you have the authority to make COVID testing free for everyone in the United States. Even though that's true, because the CDC changed this recommendation, they implemented it right away, everywhere. I couldn't believe it. I mean, we heard about the change in the recommendation, and a few days later we went to a draw site and we were told that insurance might not cover our test.
It just became political. That's why. Politics should stay out of healthcare, period.
It's incredible. I mean, this is a pandemic, and we want to figure out how to live with this virus, how to kill this virus, how to help people not to get so sick from this virus. And we wanted to get tested because we wanted to be safe in our community. And we were told that we would have to pay for it. And we ultimately decided not to get tested. What I forgot to do was say, hi, I'm a healthcare worker. And if I had done that, we probably would have gotten tested. Because I'm a healthcare worker and he lives with me. So we probably would have gotten tested. So if we decide to get tested again, I'm going to pull that card.
Yeah, you definitely want to pull that card.
For goodness sakes. All right. So Trump placed Scott Atlas on his coronavirus task force. Dr. Atlas has a specialty in, wait for it, diagnostic radiology. And he was the head of neuroradiology at Stanford University Medical Center from 1998 to 2012. His views align with Trump that opening schools is low risk because children have a low risk of contracting COVID-19 and that there is greater risk to their physical and mental well-being keeping them out of school. But children have been studied to have as much virus in their noses and throats as adults. The problem is that they can spread it to adults. And
he has a lot of background in this, right? He's got lots of history and lots of professionals that are guiding him through all this.
Meaning he's a radiologist.
Yeah. Right, right. I mean, I think my radiologist locally knows all about this.
Who is your radiologist?
I have no idea.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Sorry, I had to interject.
Bill Daly does radiology at Wyndham Hospital.
I don't know if that's still true. There's a Dr. White there, too, that has been there for a long time. But okay. I think he's still there.
All right. Yeah. You would not expect a radiologist to be in charge of what's going on with COVID. I would expect that you would need an infectious disease specialist. That would make the most sense to me.
Oh, that would make sense, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Oh.
I like things that make sense.
Yeah, I know you do.
Yeah.
I know you do.
I'm trying to make sense of things that I can't necessarily do it. And then sometimes David Byrne yells at me to stop making sense.
Oh, right. Yes, he would do that. Yeah, he does. I know.
Speaking of which, we don't know if we're going to that show.
I don't think we are.
I don't think we are.
I don't
it's
think
November.
That's going to happen, which is a real bummer because I really would love to go to that.
Well, maybe we'll figure out.
But, you know, everything is different now. We just have to pay attention. And the more of us that pay attention, the quicker this thing disappears.
Yeah,
because what happens if the virus doesn't have a host, Fran?
It dies. It has nowhere to go.
Right.
Yeah, I know.
How do you keep it from having a host?
You either stay away from it, or if you do get sick with it, you isolate, you mask, and you wash your hands, and you know you don't go to parties, and you know all that stuff.
So here's a question for you. So what happens if in a perfect world, we all, it's like a perfect world, we all decide to follow all the guidelines and all the and there are no longer any hosts available for the virus.
Virus is eradicated.
Does that mean it'll ever come back?
It depends if it's definitely eradicated or not.
I mean,
if it's eradicated, then it's eradicated. I mean, is there still smallpox?
I guess so. I don't know.
Smallpox is thought to be eradicated, although I've heard that once in a while you do get some cases, but if they isolate them, then it goes away. I mean, Ebola
exists. They got rid of Ebola by isolating.
Isolating, yes, yeah. That's it. So what you do, I mean, New Zealand was pretty much case-free, and then some people traveled there, and there were some cases, so they took care of it. They isolated the people got over it, and that was that. That's what you do when you have a scary infectious disease. You isolate the people who have it and let them get over it. God forbid they die or they get over it, and that's it. And if they don't spread it to anybody, then it goes away.
And then it's not there and it's not terrible
And
anymore.
We want to remind you that when you wear your mask, even if somebody has COVID around you, you are going to be less likely to get it. And you're also, even if you do get it, you can't get as much virus if you're wearing a mask. And that doesn't mean go wear a mask and stand shoulder to shoulder with people. You still need to follow the other things, because the further you stay away from people who you don't know what their status is, the less likely you are to catch droplets from each other. That's why if you sit with me in my office, you're going to sit 6 feet away from me and you're going to be wearing a mask. And if I see the mask drop down below your nose, I'm going to tell you to put it back up. And if it keeps coming down, I'm going to give you a piece of tape. Hold it there. By the way, if you don't have a nose clip on your mask, And you like that mask. You're wearing a mask that you like wearing, but it doesn't happen to have a nose piece, and so you find it slips a lot. That's a thing you can do. Just use a piece of tape. And piece of tape to use bandage tape. Get it from the drugstore because it's meant to adhere to skin. So it's not as sticky as a piece of duct tape, which you can use, but duct tape is going to hurt when it comes off. It'll stay in place, but it's not really meant for skin. The adhesive really might irritate hurt. You. You yeah, but use... that's why I use bandage tape. Right. You know, and so that can be useful. So once again, a big reminder to clean your nose with nasal spray containing saline or also containing small amounts of antimicrobial essential oils like oregano, tea tree oil, grapefruit seed extract, xylitol. Xylitol is not an essential oil. It's a sugar alcohol that breaks down. The big thing that xylitol does is it breaks down biofilm. So it makes it a not nice place for microorganisms to exist. So it's good for breaking down bacteria. But anything that's soapy can break the lipid layer of this virus. So the essential oils work nicely for that. And anything, salt is kill just about anything. It's just an osmotic thing. And, you know, your body knows what to do with salt. If you use things like steroids are not a good idea for this virus because they will eat up the inside of your nose and make it easier for the virus to get in. Doing a daily neti pot, especially in the evening, is a great idea with sea salt and any of the other mentioned ingredients. It's a good idea to wash your hands frequently, wear a mask when you can't safely physically distance, and don't spend time in large groups, especially indoors. Going to parties, gatherings, and bars is not a good idea. I'm looking forward to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur from the comfort of my living room on Zoom, although now I'm thinking I might be doing it from the comfort of wherever we're staying in Warwick, New York.
A hotel room,
yes.
Right?
Yeah, I was convinced to do that.
You volunteered.
Yeah. Well, I made a decision. I made a decision. One of the things that I realized, I've been really enjoying spending time with the very, very responsible Renegade Sports. Mm-hmm. So we're really trying to do this to model how we can have an event in the time of COVID. So when we are not on the bike and not eating, we are wearing a mask. If we stay distanced from one another, but we, when we're on the bike, we do wear a mask. And when we're not on the bike, we wear a mask. And so we only are unmasked when we're eating or when we're riding our bicycles. Otherwise, we're wearing a mask. And we're outside. So so it's a wonderful event, and we have hand sanitizer all the time. We insist that people, if they touch anything that's not theirs, that they sanitize first. In your goodie bag that you get at the beginning of the event, you get a little bottle of hand sanitizer.
Which is
great.
It's
really great. Mm-hmm. So we're able to do these events. So one of the things I realized is this is a safe event. It's an event where people are willing to come to. I get to spend time with people, and it is outdoors. And I realized that there's only two of these left. So after that, it's going to be difficult to spend time indoors with people. I mean, you have to make big decisions about whether you want to have people inside your house. I don't know how much we're going to be doing that this winter. I'm guessing not much, if at all, right?
Right.
And so...
Well, yeah, we'll see.
But I mean, that's something we really have to think about. I mean, most people are not going to be comfortable being indoors in people's homes. So we're not going to be spending as much time around people. And so I said, all right. And, you know, I'm not able to go visit my sister. I'm not able to go visit my mother. So I'm going to go visit my Renegade family.
Yeah.
And only two more times.
Really?
And then it's going to be cold, and then we're not going to be able to be indoors anymore. We're going to be indoors. It's going to be you and me, kid.
Yeah. And then I have to make a decision about spinning also.
Right. Whether you want to teach indoors, right.
So I'm teaching outdoors right now.
Right. Which is, that's,
which
that,
is
that
great.
Makes me comfortable.
Yeah. I'm much more comfortable with
yeah,
that.
Yeah. Indoors.
Yeah.
I mean, you can teach Zoom spinning. You should really think about that.
Yeah.
Teaching from here.
Yeah. I just have to.
And do it that way. Get it set up and do it from here.
I have to switch gears,
yes.
So to speak.
Ha ha.
Yeah.
But I think that's the best, that's the safest option.
Yeah.
Because if you go indoors and spend more time indoors in the cold and flu season, mm-hmm. stuff's more likely to spread. It's just the way it is.
Yep.
So, It's much safer to just be here. All right. So Bill asked me a question. He said, how often should we change one of those paper masks?
That's a good question.
Technically, really, just I would use it for the day and that's it. If it gets kind of mucky during the day, if you're breathing on it and it gets damp during the day, maybe a couple times a day. If you get to a point where you've been breathing a lot and you find that it's damp, change it. But I would use it for a day and then toss it. And please don't throw it on the ground. Put it in the garbage.
Oh, God. I see that in parking lots at grocery stores all the time.
Yeah, you shouldn't really be using those paper masks more than once a day because they get wet and then they're not as effective. But the prices on those are coming down. You can now get paper disposable masks in various colors and patterns. So masks are becoming more fun. My favorite masks right now are these soft cotton ones that I've been getting. They're two layers and they're soft cotton. You can use a string to tie them in the back. So anyway, I use a mask. I tend to use a cloth mask for a day and then it goes in the wash.
Mm-hmm.
If I haven't been out much, like I go to the store and I'm out to the store for less than an hour, and then I come home and I'm not wearing the mask, I might use it for a couple of days. And you can do that too. If you have a paper mask and you went to the store and, you were using the mask for, half an hour to go to the store and then they're taking it off and it didn't get damp, then you could probably reuse it. But if you're wearing it for the whole, if you're working and you're at work, look at that cute one. See, it has a little pattern on it.
That one right there, yeah.
Yeah. If you're wearing it for most of the day and it's a disposable mask, I would toss it at the end of the day because it's not going to be effective. The whole reason to wear it is it should prevent virus from getting in. And if it's damp, it's going to be easier to get the virus in.
Oh, no.
Look, that one's pink.
I found pink ones for you.
I know. It's okay. I bought a box of various pastel colors. I have a box that has pink and blue and yellow and green. And and maybe I think it might have purple, too. Though I already have. I have a lot of disposable masks because I've been preferentially wearing the cotton masks. So I haven't been going through the paper masks as much. I found that when it was hot out, the paper masks were very nice. And what's going to happen is if you have woven masks, because people were making mostly woven masks at first, the woven masks are going to be more comfortable once it gets cold out. And it's going to start getting chilly now in the next few days.
Right.
Temperature's going to dry. I don't think we're going to see 70 degrees tomorrow.
Right.
So anyway, let's talk about Bradykinin. So Bradykinin's in COVID-19. So this information was taken from an article in Biospace that was written by Mark Terry and posted on September 2nd, 2020. There were a group of researchers at Oak Ridge National Lab in Tennessee, and they used the Summit supercomputer, which is the second fastest in the world, to analyze data on more than 40,000 genes from 17,000 genetic samples related to COVID-19. The analysis took more than a week and analyzed 2.5 billion genetic combinations. They came up with a new theory dubbed the Bradykinin hypothesis on how COVID-19 affects the body. Daniel Jacobson, a computational systems biologist at Oak Ridge, noted that the expression of genes for significant enzymes in the renin-angiotensin system, also known as the RAS, which is involved in blood pressure regulation and fluid balance, was abnormal. He then tracked the abnormal RAS in the lung fluid samples to the kinin cascade, which is an inflammatory pathway closely regulated by the RAS. In the kinin system, bradykinin, which is a key peptide, causes blood vessels to leak, allowing fluid to accumulate in organs and tissues. And in COVID-19 patients, this system was unbalanced. People with the disease had increased gene expression for the bradykinin receptors and for enzymes known as kallikreins that affect the kinin pathway. From the research, SARS-CoV-2 infection typically starts when the virus enters the body by way of the ACE2 receptor, the angiotensin converting enzyme 2 receptor, in the nose, where they are common. The receptors are common in your nose. That is why you need to cover your nose. The virus then moves through the body, integrating into cells that also have ACE2, including the intestines, kidneys, and heart. This is consistent with some of COVID-19's cardiac and gastrointestinal symptoms. But the virus does not appear to stop there. Instead, it takes over the body's systems, upregulating ACE2 receptors in cells and tissues where they're not common. So they are common in your nose, but they're not common in your lungs. So the when the virus gets in, it makes more ACE2 receptors in your lungs. Or as Thomas Smith writes in Medium, COVID-19 is like a burglar who slips into your unlocked second floor window and starts to ransack your house. Once inside, though, they don't just take your stuff. They also throw open all your doors and windows so their accomplices can rush in and help pillage more efficiently. The final result of all this is what is being called a bradykinin storm. So not just a cytokine storm, but specifically a bradykinin storm. When the virus affects the RAS, the way the body regulates bradykinin runs amok. Bradykinin receptors are resensitized and the body stops breaking down bradykinin, which is typically degraded by angiotensin-converting enzyme. They believe that it is this bradykinin storm that's responsible for many of COVID-19's deadliest symptoms. So to rehash that, the bradykinin system is it's out of control. The virus causes you to make more bradykinin receptors, and the inflammatory pathway is activated. So you have more bradykinin around, and you have more bradykinin receptors. And bradykinin's deal is that it tends to make especially blood vessels leaky and make surfaces leaky. So when they're leaky, you leak fluid out of blood vessels into tissues. And now you have, that's why you get so much fluid in your lungs and you get swelling and you get inefficient, you get your heart can become inflamed and not work as well. Your kidneys can become inflamed, not work as well. And your GI, all of your systems can do that. So the key is to stop the virus before it gets into you, keep the viral load down and kill it off before it can take hold. That's what you really want to do. And if you catch a viral load that is low, then you're going, we should get that. They're tie-dye. We should get those.
Yeah, I saw those. That's why I popped them up on the screen for you.
Yeah. So it's a really good idea to get that virus out of your body and not be exposed to a lot of virus in the first place so it doesn't multiply and take hold, because what it does is it hijacks a lot of systems to create excessive levels of inflammation and then it takes over and it creates this whole chain of events. If you're already inflamed, so if you have high blood pressure, you probably have an unbalanced bradykinin system to start with. And so if you have leaky blood vessels, if your nitric oxide function isn't great, it's already there. Virus can get in more easily. If you have inflammation in any of these places, where you have any place in your body that is leaky, the virus can get in more readily. So this is why it's really important that if you have anything going on in your body, you want to get it taken care of, no matter what it is, whether it's a gastrointestinal issue, whether it's, whether you have cardiovascular issues, whether you have diabetes. You want to get all those, you want to be to optimize your health, and you'll be less likely to get sick from this. So now, mind you, so if you want to stop COVID in its tracks, once again, the hygiene is the first stop, that because everyone can do that regardless of what your current health status is. If you can clean that virus out and prevent it from getting into your body, that is that's the first way to go. Because even if you have a pre-existing condition that makes you more likely to get sick, if you're doing the hygiene part, it's less likely to get in. If you're wearing the mask, if you're washing your hands, if you're cleaning your nose, if you're cleaning your throat by either doing nasal sprays or neti pots, and you're gargling, then you're going to be more likely to stop the virus in its tracks. I can't say 100% that this is what will work for you, but because people catch it, even if they think they're doing all the hygiene right, people still get sick anyway. But you're going to be less likely to. So, mind you, there are natural substances that calm and regulate bradykinin. And there are things that you can take. There are things that are readily available, natural substances that can calm bradykinin. Aloe is one of them, so you would have to drink aloe juice. And aloe juice doesn't always taste great, but, you know, you can find ways to do it. There are kinds of aloe juice where they just have the aloe components and you're not drinking the gooey juice. But if you can get that down, that can be helpful for you. You can take bromelain. Bromelain is pineapple enzyme. And there's going to be some level of bromelain in pineapple. Bromelain calms bradykinins. So now Ron's going to hear that and he's going to go, okay, I'm going to run out and buy a pineapple.
I can do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like pineapple. I love fresh pineapple.
Yes. Mm. So there is some bromelain in pineapple. And I've had people tell me, people who have inflammatory conditions, I've told them about the bromelain in pineapple and they go home and start eating pineapple and they feel better. I will say that there is less bromelain in pineapple fruit than there is in pineapple stem. And you're probably not going to eat the pineapple stem. It's not really conducive to eating.
Mm.
So that's why you're going to go get the bromelain pills. And okay. You could do that. You can buy bromelain as a supplement. Bromelain is a lovely enzyme. It's antimicrobial. It's a proteolytic enzyme, so it breaks down proteins. And it can kill bacteria. It breaks down mucus. And so if you have a lot of sludge in your lungs, it can help to break that down. That's one of the things we give to people when they have bronchitis and coughs and pneumonia and stuff. All right, polyphenols. So by the way, bromelain is actually known to reduce the cough produced by the ACE inhibitor antihypertensive medications, which is thought to be bradykinin mediated. So when you take an ACE inhibitor, those ACE inhibitor drugs, I'm not sure about the ARBs, the angiotensin receptor antagonist. That's going to be your, anything that ends in sartan, valsartan, irbesartan, losartan. They are angiotensin receptor blockers, whereas your ACE inhibitors, give me an example of an ACE inhibitor. Can't think of an ACE inhibitor. Mm. I think that's the prils, but I'm not sure. Like lisinopril, for example.
Inhibitor.
Yeah, just throw ACE inhibitor in there, see what comes up. Yeah, ACE inhibitor. So what's the ACE inhibitor? Give me an example of one. Just tell me one.
Most common trace.
Yeah.
Types of ACE inhibitors for heart disease.
Click on that. It said Lotensin, which is one of them. Okay. Yes, the prils. I was right. It's all the prils: benazepril, captopril, lisinopril. Moexapril, my goodness, perinapril, there's ones I haven't heard of, quinapril, ramapril, anything that ends in pril is usually an ACE inhibitor. So if you're on one of those drugs, unfortunately, that dysregulates your bradykinin system. And my theory is that if you're on an angiotensin converting enzyme antagonist, you might not do as well with COVID because it dysregulates your bradykinin.
And they're used for high blood pressure.
That's right.
Oh.
Yes, they are. They're hypertension medications. And they make they give you a cough. They give you a dry cough.
Ew.
Yes.
Which is not good.
Well, it's similar to what COVID does to you.
Exactly.
Yes. So it's because they dysregulate your bradykinin. So what are some things you can take? So bromelain actually is known to reduce the cough produced by ACE inhibitors. And so it might be something that could be useful if you actually contract COVID, that it's going to help to reduce the cough because it's going to calm down the bradykinin system. The other thing that's really great for calming bradykinins is polyphenols. And polyphenols are in healthy food. And if you have a lot of people who are not eating healthy food, they're not going to do as well. So you know how we were scared of elderberry because we thought it could bring on a cytokine storm?
Yeah.
Don't be afraid of it.
Okay.
No, because it's got a lot of polyphenols, and the polyphenols in it actually calm bradykinin. It's better to take than not to take.
Okay.
So there are a lot of foods that have polyphenols in them. And so polyphenols, they are wonderful micronutrients. We get them from a lot of plant-based foods. They are have wonderful antioxidant activity, and they can improve digestion issues. They can help you with your weight. They can help you regulate your blood sugar, especially if you have diabetes. They can help with neurodegenerative diseases and cardiovascular diseases. They can have some side effects, And they're more, that's more common if you're taking them in a supplement instead of getting them naturally through food. And they can't, so if you take pills with polyphenols in it, they can reduce your iron absorption. So just be careful of that. But the best thing to do is to eat them, you know, because they're in so many lovely things that like a lot of, but they're in healthy food. So if you eat junk, you're not going to get as many polyphenols. So cloves are high in polyphenols. Oh,
there you go.
So we need to cook with some more cloves.
Cloves.
Yes, 100 grams of cloves has over 15,000 milligrams of polyphenols.
Wow.
Now, peppermint is pretty high as well. So eating more peppermint is a good idea. Star anise only has half as much as peppermint, but it's pretty high. But cloves are really impressive. We need to start finding ways to cook with cloves, something that cloves would taste good in. Probably it's a good part of, wait for it, pumpkin spice.
Oh, no, yeah! Not anything but pumpkin spice.
Well, guess what? Cocoa powder and dark chocolate are high in polyphenols.
They also flavor meat, sauces, and rice dishes, often used along with cinnamon and nutmeg in sweet dishes, especially pumpkin pie flavored items for the autumn and winter holidays.
That's right.
And drinks such as malts, wine, or cider.
So cloves are really high in polyphenols. It's like the highest seasoning in polyphenols. So finding out ways to use cloves. So here's a cool thing you can do.
We're going to get some cloves.
Cocoa powder and dark chocolate. So if you, a great thing to, if you're going to drink hot cocoa, it's not a great idea to get just the packets that are full of sugar and have alkalized cocoa in them. Cocoa is high in flavanols. If the best thing to do really is to get raw organic cocoa powder that has not been alkalized because it's going to have a higher polyphenol content, and then make hot cocoa out of that. And if you feel like you need to sweeten it, then just use small amounts of honey or maple syrup to do that, because you can get some polyphenols in the honey and maple syrup. Isn't that wonderful? And then guess what? You can spice up your cocoa with cinnamon and cloves.
Hey, get this.
Okay.
You can also, cloves also ease digestion.
Yeah.
Ah. Oh, yeah. And it is key to weight loss. Cloves may also rev up the metabolism naturally.
Well, they're carminatives.
We're going to get some cloves.
Okay, we'll get some cloves. Yeah. They smell
and
good,
you can
too.
Make a clove tea also.
Yeah. It's kind of intense, but that's okay. But I think what I would do is I'd sprinkle some clove powder into some hot cocoa. Get some raw organic cocoa powder and pour some hot water in it. And then if I wanted it a little sweet, I'd put either honey or maple syrup in it, because you can get more flavanols from your honey or maple syrup. And then I'd season it with some cinnamon and turmeric and some cloves.
Look at this. Yeah. One of the most trusted remedies to induce sleep is the clove oil remedy.
Yeah.
Mix 4 drops of clove oil with salt and apply to your forehead.
Oh,
and you should feel an instant relief from any discomfort, enabling you to sleep better.
Oh, you could try it. Yeah.
I don't need to.
So,
but that's all right.
That's fine.
Some people do, though.
So, cocoa powder is the way you want to go. If you have dark chocolate, chocolate candy, you're not going to get as much flavanol from candy because it's been made into the candy and it has the cocoa butter in it. But the powdered cocoa, when you're having powder, if you're having cacao nibs that you're crunching on or cocoa powder, you're going to get more flavanols from those. So you can throw cacao nibs into your yogurt. You can throw it into your, even into salad, make your salad a little sweet, make a fruit salad and put high polyphenol fruits into your fruit salad and put in cacao nibs, and you'll get some more flavanols that way.
Hmm.
All right. Berries. Yay, berries. All the berries are high in polyphenols. The high bush blueberries and the low bush blueberries are actually going to have more because the polyphenols are in the skin, and you eat more skin when you eat the little tiny blueberries. If you're up north, the wild blueberries are still happening. I remember when I lived in Newfoundland, we were picking blueberries into October, and then by the end of October they were done. Our blackberries are done.
Yeah,
blackberries are really high in polyphenols. Strawberries, raspberries, any berries. So this time of year, you're not going to be able to get berries. And grapes are also high in polyphenols. And we are in season for grapes. So you can get nice organic grapes at the health food store. And you're going to get nice polyphenols from the grape skins. And if you want to continue to eat berries, one thing you can do is to get frozen berries and then make smoothies with them or cook with them. So, and one of the things I like to do is I like to make apple crisp or fruit crisp this time of year. And if I want to use berries, because I want to use organic ones, I will just get the, I'll get the frozen organic berries and I'll throw them in and they bake up really nice with your apple crisp or whatever fruit crisp that you're making. So by the way, the berry with the most polyphenols is the black chokeberry. Has 1,700 per 100 grams. A lot of polyphenols in the black chokeberry. That's not as much as 100 grams of cloves. Cloves are off the charts. Really incredible. So fruits that are not berries have polyphenols. Black currants, plums, sweet cherries, and apples. So apples, you have to eat the skin. Cherries are not technically berries, but they're nice and dark and they have polyphenols in them. Black currants are really high. That's why Ribena and black currant juice is so popular in Britain, because citrus is harder to get in Britain because Britain has no part of it that's tropical. So all the citrus that comes into Britain is going to be coming from countries that has a subtropical or tropical place in it. So they have to import all of their citrus. Whereas black currants grow in Britain and they are little dark things and they can make this beautiful black juice or deep reddish black juice from it. And it's pretty sour because it has a lot of vitamin C in it and has lovely polyphenols in it. So by the way, you can get black currant juice at the health food store or the health food section of the supermarket. That's something you can drink. You can also get dried black currants sometimes. I don't know if all health food stores have it. I'll have to check to see if they have it at the co-op. But if you like to eat raisins, you can get dried black currants and they don't taste that different. You can throw them into your oatmeal or your muffins the way you might use a raisin. And they're about half the size. Like dried black currants, about half the size of raisins, and you can get them. So we can go to the co-op and ask them if they have any dried black currants on the shelf.
Okay.
If not, you can probably get them online easily. Guess what else is polyphenols? Beans.
Beans.
Yes, especially the darker the bean, the more polyphenol. Oh, no. Don't listen to me. Beans contain a large number of nutritional benefits. They have polyphenols, black and white beans. White beans have a lot of polyphenols in them. Who knew? White beans have a little bit less, but not much less. So beans have a fair amount of polyphenols in them.
White beans like garbanzo beans or what?
White garbanzo beans probably also have I think when you're saying white bean, you mean that's the bean, like white navy beans.
Okay. It's like the color of the bean.
Yeah, but black beans are not just black, but that is the species. The subspecies is black beans. Yeah, but... do chickpeas have polyphenols in them? You can look that up. I don't know. Probably. So nuts have polyphenols. Great. So hazelnuts, and hazelnuts are the polyphenolist. Walnuts are not so high. If you want to get your polyphenols, you're looking at your pecans and hazelnuts. Almonds are sort of in the middle, but hazelnuts and pecans are impressive in terms of the amounts of polyphenols. This is going to make me prefer to eat... pecans and hazelnuts with my salad over the walnuts I've been eating. I might still eat the walnuts. Well, the thing with the walnuts, though, is they have those fabulous monounsaturated fats, and they're good for your brain. So I might still eat them, but I might choose to get some pecans and hazelnuts, too. All right. So that's good to know.
There you go.
So if you eat vegetables, you're going to have more polyphenols. So eat more veggies.
Eat more veggies. Yeah, we eat a lot of veggies.
You come to the naturopath and they tell you to eat vegetables. Is that so funny?
It is funny, isn't it? You would think that would be kind of a no-brainer, but I guess it's
so
not.
So artichokes are really high in polyphenols. Chicory is high in polyphenols. We don't eat chicory or drink chicory tea a lot.
No.
But if you want to consume chicory, you can get powdered chicory and add it to your coffee. In Europe, there are places where they like to add chicory to their coffee. I know you're not going to want to do that because you want your coffee naked. I know.
Is it going to taste like?
You could try
fluffy?
It.
Fluffy.
The other thing you could do is you can get coffee substitutes that feature chicory. So like that Ticino brand, for example. There are other coffee substitutes that have chicory in them.
Coffee substitutes are like light beer. Why?
Okay. The answer is, so that is a great question. Why would you do a coffee substitute if you could just drink coffee? Because you get other health benefits from it. That's okay. Why. Okay. I mean, you're right that the coffee is going to have polyphenols. It definitely has flavonoids in it. It definitely has a lot of antioxidants in it. Real good for your liver. But so are these other things. I mean, if you have, sometimes coffee substitutes have wonderful herbs in them that have a lot of health benefits. And you're calling it a coffee substitute, but you could also call it a type of herbal tea that you're drinking for to benefit your health that has a robust flavor. So one thing to do would be, if you want to enhance your health, is to mix chicory or mix a coffee substitute, a nice flavored coffee substitute, with your coffee and see if you like the way that tastes, because you can get more health benefits that way. So red onions have a lot of polyphenols, but that's not happening for me, unfortunately.
No more onions for Fran.
Yeah, no, my stomach is just not, I'm not a, alliums and me just don't get along. It's really, I love the way they taste, but they do not like me, or they like to hurt me. It's unfortunate. So spinach, and you know what, the spinach is going to be back because the nights are getting cold enough that they can grow spinach again. So it's time for sag paneer again. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, right.
Yes. And so they, in fact, they had spinach at the farmer's market this week. We just, we didn't go to the farmer's market, so we didn't get it. All right. Soy has polyphenols in it. So, and the best way to get your polyphenols is with soy flour.
Ah.
Tempeh has about a quarter as much polyphenols as, it doesn't say anything about the edamame, because that's how I usually eat my soy. I have edamame, toasted edamame, where I'm actually eating the seeds. That's probably a pretty decent way to get the polyphenols. The flour, it's ground, so you're inside the seeds, so you're just getting good doses of the polyphenols. And tempeh, you're also eating the seeds, and they're fermented, so you're eating a lot of whole seeds, so you're getting them. Tofu and soy yogurt and sprouts, you're really, you're not eating a lot of whole seeds. So the processing makes it so you're not getting as many polyphenols. So if you want to get polyphenols from soy, tempeh is pretty good. Soy flour is excellent. I would say that edamame and toasted edamame is going to be a good way to do it. So black and green tea have a lot of polyphenols too. And black tea has more than green tea, not a little bit more. So you're talking about 15 milligrams more per unit volume, or less than 15. But black tea is going to have more polyphenols, and I'm a big black tea fan. Red wine, you know, and so red wine has a lot of polyphenols too. And, you know, the number of polyphenols contributes to its antioxidant count. So it has 101 per 100 milliliters. Rosé and white wine still have so rosé and white wine don't have nearly as many polyphenols as red wine. The red is where the anthocyanins are, so that's where you're going to get your polyphenols. So polyphenols can be concerning if you take them mostly in supplements. Because they're such powerful antioxidants, you're getting concentrated polyphenols. Sometimes the genes can go awry. And so you can have toxic effects to your genes. They can affect your thyroid. Now, isoflavones in soy have estrogenic activity, and that can be a good thing or a bad thing depending on what you're looking for. If you're me and you're menopausal, I might want some more estrogen activity. So that isoflavone raise in estrogenic activity is helpful for me. But when I was still in my reproductive life, I remember once I sort of overdosed on soy. I took soy milk and I put in a soy protein powder and I got sore breasts. And that's because the isoflavones, I had such a high dose of isoflavones, they were actually bonding to my breast tissue and causing swelling. So if that happens to you, if you get any discomfort from taking too much soy, then back it down. The other thing is, if you do too much soy and you have a thyroid issue, it can slow down your thyroid function. Isoflavones will do that, so you have to be careful. And you have to be careful with interacting with other medications. So I would say that if you're going to do polyphenols, really the best way to do them is to eat them in food, that you're better off doing that than taking them as a supplement. Having said that, I'm definitely taking my elderberry syrup. So elderberry syrup, because of the polyphenols and because of there are immune compounds that calm bradykinin, I'm definitely, and it's directly studied to be antiviral. I am going to be taking elderberry syrup this year. So polyphenols are your friends, and you have a whole bunch of foods that, and what you basically have to do is eat healthy foods. Like, you can try to remember all these, but cloves are a big deal. Cocoa powder, dark chocolate, any berry at all, other fruits that aren't berries, especially black currants, and beans, nuts, and your two highest polyphenol nuts are hazelnuts and pecans. So I'm going to get me some hazelnuts and pecans.
Yeah.
Then your veggies, your veggie that's highest in polyphenols is artichokes, which I love, but regular artichokes. Yep.
Yeah.
And then soy, soy flour especially, but also soy tempeh and edamame, black and green tea, and red wine. Maybe have some red wine tonight. Okay. So there you go. All right. So there you go. So that was a lot of good information.
Yeah, no kidding. That was great, Fran.
All right. So wear your mask, wash your hands, eat your fiber, take good care of yourself. I have more stuff that I want to talk about, but I'll talk about it next week.
No noses.
Yeah, I know. We had a really funny, we went to Vermont last weekend. Last weekend, we didn't wind up doing a show because... We were away on Monday, mm-hmm. and it just became too much to try to fit it in for Tuesday. So, but we stopped at the Brattleboro Food Co-op, and there's a very funny photo outside the door that showed you that if you go into the Brattleboro Food Co-op, you really needed to cover your nose and your mouth. And they had diagrams, and they showed, don't do this, and they showed, you know, people doing the half masker thing, which annoys us so much. Oh my god. But that was fun going to the Brattleboro Food Co-op.
It was. Yeah. It's a great food co-op.
Right. So, all right. So I'm going to go. You've been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram, at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org.